All right, you're back in the DFSR, and before we get started, a quick programming note. James and I will talk about our NFL Week 6 cash game plays for FanDuel and DraftKings first, and then at the end of the call, we will jump on the line with Chris Durrell, our lead NHL writer, to discuss tonight's opening of the NHL season and what that means for DFS. So stay tuned at the end to get a quick glimpse into NHL, but for now, you're back in the DFSR, and I am Doug Norrie, and that is...
James Davis. I'm almost done chewing.
He promised he would mute himself while he was chewing. I could still kind of hear it. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com or dfsr.com. You can go over to the site, check out all of the free content you need really for every DFS sport. We're obviously well into the NFL season. MLB still holding on during the playoffs. NHL starting tonight, and really just everything else you need. NBA coming very, very soon. Try a free trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, where you can get optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. That is free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. All right, buddy, let's talk about the we released yesterday, late yesterday, or maybe early this morning, our week six value cash game plays for FanDuel and DraftKings. This week, among all others, struck me as sort of the hardest. Well, it was the easiest to figure out some of the top plays. And then we had a little trouble sort of grabbing out the differences between some of the other maybe mid-tier or even upper-tier plays. So I found this week to be one of the hardest, mostly because of the lack of cheaper options. What were your thoughts when you kind of looked down the list of just where our projections were coming out through the first run?
Sorry, I'm still laughing that you said we released it like it was a hot new summer blockbuster.
All right, well, I just couldn't think of the word. I should have said
right.
We published.
Now that we dropped it. we dropped that fresh new article, and it's coming at you live from DavisFantasySportsRankings.com. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you and I talked about this together, so I do agree with your general sense here, which is that the top end seemed pretty straightforward, and a lot of times I think there actually is a decent amount of debate on the top end. And then the middle tier was reasonable, and then the cheapish... I don't know, the cheapish bad guys, you know, right. For lack of a better term. There didn't seem to be a lot of cheapish bad guys, but of course the problem with daily fantasy football is you kind of need the cheapish bad guys are what make you pay for all the expensive guys. So it's definitely shaping up to be kind of a challenging week.
Cheapish bad guy sounds like some kind of like standalone villain for a cartoon my kid watches.
It's like, I was going to say like maybe it's like Chris Rock and Bill Murray and they're, you know, it's like a buddy cop movie or something.
So let's start with quarterback. We wrote up three quarterbacks, two high-priced guys, and then we tried to throw in a cheap guy to sort of even things out because we almost fell in the trap of just writing up all the most expensive plays, and I feel like we're pretty good about not doing that on a week-to-week basis. Sure. We want you to be able to at least look at the article and be able to construct a pretty close to something that you could put together for a lineup. I'm not saying that would be your lineup come Sunday, but we want our articles to, you know, first-time readers or people that are just coming and checking out that content to at least look at it and say, I can make a lineup with this, with these plays, if nothing else. So we started quarterback. The first guy on the list we had was Roethlisberger. He's coming off a huge week against the Jets. They are another big favorite going into Miami or playing Miami this week, who's really struggled on defense. Give me some of the thoughts on Roethlisberger. Do you think he ends up as the cash game play here, or are we? I mean, well, just give me your thoughts on Big Ben.
Yeah, Roethlisberger, I think one thing that he has that the rest of the league doesn't have is two just amazing options at both wide receiver one and running back to pass two out of the backfield. And so I think that's going to pretty dramatically raise his floor. I mean, we've seen the way that they've deployed Le'Veon Bell so far this season, and that all leads me to believe that Ben is about as safe a commodity at quarterback as we're going to see while everyone is healthy and ticking along. So I think that's primarily what we're seeing here. Obviously, Miami as well, quite a good matchup. Miami's bad defending the run and the pass, frankly. Steelers rate to get ahead, and while they're going to certainly run the ball a fair amount, their short passing game is excellent as well. So, yeah, great play all formats.
Yeah, sure. We saw him pass a fair amount, even a game. I mean, the game ended up being a blowout sort of near the end against the Jets. It stayed a little closer than people thought, you know, for the majority of it. And he still threw 47 times last week, a little much less against KC the week before, but he's kind of good to go in that range around 38 pass attempts per game. And I just think the floor stays pretty high with him considering the overall points implied, and just the matchup. The next guy we had, he's clearly back, is Tom Brady. The Patriots, again, they're going to open up. They're going to open up most games as huge favorites, really, from here on out. They're just the offense is that good. He's clearly has no rust. They're -8.5. Does the -8.5 concern you at all with a guy like Brady against the Bengals? Just because, again, we have some blowout potential here.
Well, in the past, the answer would be no. I think Brady, you know, he's one of those guys that the Patriots are the classic, use the short pass as the run game thing. So Brady generally is less, you know, less susceptible to blowouts than most quarterbacks. Although they did use LeGarrette Blount around the goal line quite a bit last week, and he still did get a lot of carries in quite an extended lead game against Cleveland. So I could see them going back to that kind of general game plan again, Blount in the high teens to low 20s carries, and that will limit Brady's upside quite a bit. I mean, he doesn't need to lose too many touchdowns to all of a sudden not be able to pay off that $9,000 price. All that said, he's probably still a value. I think the Patriots are still, you know, back in the proving themselves mode, and that is sick hashtag narrative street and all that stuff. I get it. But I do think that he's still a worthwhile grab while the price is still relatively affordable. I think we could see Brady's price climb, you know, another 500 without too much difficulty on FanDuel, maybe even more than that. And while I'm not sure who you should pair with him, like for big stacks, like he's kind of spreading the ball all over the place, as a standalone, I like Brady quite a lot.
He's the third most expensive quarterback on DraftKings, the most expensive on FanDuel. I guess I would probably, I was trend toward, if you know, get him a little cheaper if you can. The other guy that our system really likes, and the reason I put him in as a sort of a note at the end and didn't write him up, was Cam Newton. Now, Newton's an interesting case this week. Our system has him for the most projected quarterback points going in, and if it was all things being equal, that probably is correct. The problem, the hesitancy I have with Cam is two reasons. One, he is coming off a week where he sat out because of concussion, which is always a little concerning. And then there was another piece of news that came out about him where people within his camp, whatever that means, probably his agent or something, is saying that they want him to run less to be able to preserve just his career. So those two things coming. So he has about as good a matchup as you can get against New Orleans. They have, I believe, either the first or second highest most implied points. So it doesn't seem like Vegas is too worried about it. But I am just concerned. Those two pieces of news worry me just a little bit on the Newton front. He could be a chalk play. I don't think he will because of it, but that's where my concern is with Newton.
Yeah, I think it's very concerning, really. I mean, so much of Newton's value comes from his ability to get out in the run game, and if you lose too much of that, you're starting to get in real bad shape. So my alarm bells are ringing in my ear when I hear news like that. And for Newton, you know, to give a little bit of context, you know, 50 running yards, which is, you know, a good day for Newton, but even call it 40 running yards, that's like a passing touchdown. And how many quarterbacks could afford to just leave one passing touchdown on the table each week? I mean, and to say nothing of when Newton actually gets in the end zone, which he does quite a bit, and, you know, at a much higher rate than most quarterbacks as well. So, you know, you're looking at a guy who was already kind of a fringe top tier quarterback based on this year's performances. You know, some weeks great, some weeks not so much. And I think this pushes him down certainly below the Roethlisberger and Brady level for me.
Yeah, and the fact that he got hurt on a running play, I mean, look, you can get hurt however, but the fact that he got hurt on a running play, he looked really out of sorts going into that play and just sort of stopped. People have seen it now, but he stopped on the goal line when he was already in, and that's where he got popped. Although that may have just sort of exasperated something that was already happening with him at that point, because he just looked like he was sort of wobbly. So that is the part where we will look at his projection, is to say how much do we buy into the idea that he's just going to be a slightly different quarterback going forward, specifically about the run. That's my concern with him. Though, like I said, as of right now, he is the highest projected quarterback in our system. And if the other injury pieces wouldn't have happened, I think it would be a total lock and load play. The cheaper guy we wrote up. So here's the thing. We wanted to write up a cheaper quarterback because some of the other plays that we put in further down the line were, you're not going to be able to play Brady and then all the top running backs and all the top receivers, sort of like I said at the beginning of the show. But we wrote up Alex Smith. There was a sort of a log jam of cheaper quarterbacks. We really could have gone in a couple different directions here. We chose Smith because of the matchup, but why don't you walk the listener through why he was the guy as opposed to maybe some of these other cheaper quarterbacks. Again, this guy, Alex Smith, is not on the Big Ben Brady level. This is more of a points per dollar play.
Yeah, sure. So I think, first of all, you know, Alex Smith and the Chiefs got this perception of being a run-first offense, which, you know, they had been historically when Jamaal Charles was healthy. But this season, it hasn't really played out that way very much. I mean, the fewest pass attempts Smith has in a given game this year is 33, as many as 50, which is last game against the Steelers. And while, yes, he's still a very on the low end of yards per attempt, again, he's 6,800 on FanDuel, so it's not like you have to pay much for it. That really is a lot of opportunity. And the Chiefs, you know, they haven't been horrendous this season at, you know, giving him some protection, letting him take some time in the pocket. So while he still gets sacked a lot for a guy that, you know, was ostensibly supposed to be this kind of running, passing, hybrid quarterback, and he's not a great, maybe not a great football player overall, he's affordable enough to where, and he passes enough to where I think we could see a potentially big week out of him. I mean, week one against San Diego, he did go 34 of 48 for 363 and two touchdowns. I think that type of performance is in him, and if you get something like that on these prices, you're going to be very happy.
Oakland has been just dreadful against the pass this year. They allow a ton of opponents' plays per game. The Chiefs, the one piece of, well, excuse me, they don't allow a ton. They allow more than league average plays per game. The one note on the Chiefs that just came out today, we released the article yesterday, was the Jamaal Charles looks like he will be more of a go this week than in weeks past. I mean, he called himself 110%, that he'll basically be a full go this week. What does that do? Does that change your mind at all about Smith for here, or is Charles just enough in the pass game and the Raiders defense is bad enough that we can still just consider Smith here?
No, I mean, I think Smith actually, the presence of Charles might help Smith in some ways. So no, I'm not worried at all by that news.
Some other cheaper quarterbacks that we sort of hemmed and hawed about that showed up in certain places. Tyrod Taylor looks pretty cheap on DraftKings. I don't mind the value that you get there. There's Andy Dalton if you think he's playing catch up against the Patriots. So there are some other cheaper guys that we've thought about, and I think that those plays still kind of make sense in some way if you think the game script works out for any of them. So it wasn't like Smith was a landslide victory in that 50, I mean, on DraftKings at 5,500-ish range, and on FanDuel is like in the low 6,000s. So there are a couple other guys there, but I do like the way that's, I just like the defense that he's going to get to face. And like you said, if he has another weapon in Charles, that could just help his cause.
Yeah, and I think the defensive point is probably a crucial one that maybe we glossed over just a little bit until now, which is to say this team has really played no defense in Oakland, that is. They've been the worst team against the pass this season. I don't see any reason why that would change going into next week. So, yeah, it's definitely all systems go here. Cool.
All right, on to running back. The play, I mean, okay, so we've been joking how we could have basically been able to just hit copy and paste on some of the picks from week to week, and we joke about it because we've done it, but it's also correct for us to do it.
Sure.
And that the first guy that shows up here is Le'Veon Bell. Bell, a lot of the same reasons as Roethlisberger in terms of just how bad the Miami defense has been. The amount of looks he gets per game are just really hard for any other running back to contend with, especially how they'll feature him just almost as much as in the passing game as some wide receiver twos on other teams. Right. So Bell is expensive this week. He has not, I honestly am not even sure if we've reached the top of his salary yet, but he's 9,300 on FanDuel and somewhere in that same range on DraftKings. Do you have any issue, Jamie, that, like, of all the big money plays this week, is he the guy that you just want? He's 7,900 on DraftKings. Is he a must for you in cash games this week? Or can you talk yourself into a fade of Bell? I mean, what are your kind of thoughts there? And by the way, it's obvious that we want to play him in cash games. I guess my point is there any case against playing him here?
I don't think so. I mean, do you need a longer answer than that? The guy had 29 touches and an explosive yards per touch last week, so... Yeah, I mean, Bell is just a phenomenal. He's a running back and a wide receiver. On any given day, he could put it up wide receiver one or running back one totals. And when you have a guy like that, especially as just a complete standalone, when you compare him to the rest of the guys in the league, like, it's just an easy one. You know, don't overthink it. Just play the guy.
The thing with him also is he's been held out of the end zone so far. So he had, in his first two games, he's had 38 rushing attempts and 14 receptions on a bunch of targets and is without a touchdown. And he's still averaging about 25 points a game. So, I mean, the day he starts getting into the end zone once or even twice or something like that, then you're just looking at, like, he maybe hasn't hit his peak yet, which seems crazy. So he's the guy.
On DraftKings, just forget about it. I mean, the points per reception, he's just in a league of his own. And it's, I mean, he's already in a league of his own. And he's fresh compared to most guys in the league. Yeah, it's looking quite good.
Yeah, so he's probably, of all the plays this week, he's the must. And I'm not positive that you see it, only because there are a few other running backs you can consider. As far as our system is concerned, there is almost no scenario where it wants you to get away from Bell. The next guy we had on there was DeMarco Murray, and this is where it got a little bit closer for us. There is a group of running backs that sort of, again, fall. I could be talked into a group of about four or five different guys here. We wrote up two. The one of them we wrote up was DeMarco Murray. Give us the case for Murray.
Sure. So Murray, I think you always want to be hesitant taking running backs on bad teams, and Tennessee is assuredly that. The thing about Murray is when Tennessee is in the game, his touches are just absolutely astronomical. I mean, 27 touches against Houston, 32 touches against Miami. He has a track record of being able to carry a big workload from back when he was in Dallas. Last year's debacle with the Eagles, notwithstanding there. But yeah, he's been terrific on a yards per carry basis. He's been terrific on a workload basis. He seems to be the only good skill player on Tennessee. And while I'm going to be hesitant with him in the first tough matchup they get, the Browns are not that. So given that you can get Murray, I mean, again, if you're deciding between him and Bell, it's not going to be much of a discussion, right? So you're just going to play Bell. But if you aren't in that position, then, or if you want to go in a big tournament, he has arguably as much upside as Bell, I think.
Right. They're not going to see Tennessee as -7 favorites probably at any other point this season, barring some, like the last game of the season when the opposing team is sitting all their players because they're on their way to the playoffs or something like that. But this is, they are huge favorites at home against a really, really bad team. Like you said, the Tennessee doesn't have much in the way of other guys. Like, they really don't have any receivers to speak of. They have, you know, an above average tight end in Walker. Outside of that, they just kind of need to give the ball to Murray, and if they're just in a get in and get out sort of situation because they are up on Cleveland, he could be in that 25 touch, maybe even more range. I love the floor there for him. There's really no one else competing with his usage. The other player that we threw in there was Jordan Howard, coming off a nice week where he was able to get in the end zone through the air, which we probably didn't see. The touches were down a little bit from the week before, though that could have been some game flow pieces against Indiana. How do you like Howard again against a Jacksonville team? Is he in that category for you of like running backs without a committee, and that just gives him a lot of implied safety?
Yeah, so yes and no. I mean, the thing about Howard is he is one of those running backs that doesn't seem to have a committee, although Carey has been getting a few touches there. But, you know, just the 19 touches against Indianapolis in what should be a relatively good matchup for the Bears has to give you a little bit of pause. I mean, that's not in the same discussion as where Bell and Murray are, for instance. The issue with Howard that I have, I guess, is that we just don't really know what his baseline is supposed to be. I think if his floor is 19 touches against Indianapolis, he won't have a whole lot of difficulty paying off these prices. But there is a chance that the floor goes a little bit lower than that. And just like Murray, I don't think this is the week that's going to happen. So I think this is another week. It's a very good week to continue to test the waters with Howard. If anyone else's number gets called with any increasing frequency, or if, say, they don't feature him as much in the passing game, you know, there are things I'm going to keep my eye out for on Howard. It also continues to feel not completely spectacular to keep playing guys who, you know, are not as cheap as they used to be, right? Like Howard, we played him for $5,800 2 weeks ago. This is quite a worse price than that. So, you know, I do like Howard quite a bit, and I'm just, I'm cooling my jets just a little bit on him.
The reason Howard is on the list or on in this group, he's not in that group of guys we mentioned like Murray and Bell. The fact is he's getting a decent amount of touches for a slightly less price. Like you'll get him less than Bell and Murray. You'll get him less than like guys like David Johnson, LaShawn McCoy. So I think that's where he sort of comes into the discussion. If he's going to see similar usage as some of those other players for, I don't know, 10 to 12% less, that is why we ended up writing him up as opposed to some of those other guys. Jacksonville has been brutal against the run this year, better against the pass than they were, but they ranked 29th in DVOA against the run so far this season. And if the Bears are just going to need to lean on him, then the usage is going to be there. I don't mind getting him at a little bit cheaper than some of the other guys we mentioned.
Yep, sounds great.
All right, in the same you started singing, buddy. Thanks. In the same vein of copy and paste, Antonio Brown led the receivers. It's the same. It follows the same flow as the Bell and Big Ben thing. He just is a target monster. He's amazing. He's very expensive on DraftKings. He's 10,000 on DraftKings. Now, you're not going to be able to play Bell, Brown. I'm not even going to make the case for Brown. He's great. But you're not going to be able to play Bell, Brown, and probably not an expensive quarterback. At 10,000 on DraftKings, which one of those things has to go? Is it the quarterback? Hmm. Is it Brown? Or is it Bell?
Probably the quarterback, as crazy as it sounds. I mean, we continue to see that quarterback is a place where we can get value from time to time. So, yeah, that does sound pretty nuts, but that's how I'm feeling right now. How about you?
It's close for me. I think you can get some cheaper value at quarterback here. I think 10,000 is probably the most expensive we see him. I can't imagine he gets really much more expensive than that. He's, 1,100 than the next closest guy in Julio Jones. And is totally nuts. And again, the matchup is great. He needs a lot to go right to be able to pay that off more times than not. So there's a bunch of scenarios here where I think if anyone was to go, for me, it might be Brown, because he just needs so much to go right. He needs to have the receptions. He needs to get into the end zone. We've seen Coates cut into a little bit of that. And I have Coates, and I'll just add in Coates here.
Yeah, let's talk about Sammy Coates too, because I think he's a really, really intriguing. I mean, we referenced him a little bit in the last podcast, but we've since dove into that even deeper.
So, yeah, I ended up just writing them up together in our article just because the contextual factors were mostly the same. The emergence of Coates, especially in the red zone and as a deep threat, even though Coates hasn't been on the field a ton, probably does cut into Brown's implied targets just enough that I am a little bit – for that price, he would be the guy for me to go.
Right, and so let's dive in on Sammy Coates for a second, because I think this is going to be one of the big decisions a lot of DFS players have for this week. So notably, Coates out-targeted Brown last week, and he had – now, back-to-back weeks where he had a 25% target share on the snaps he was on the field. Very troubling, however, is the fact that in the last 2 weeks, he's played just 77 snaps. Now, in case you're wondering, Antonio Brown has been out there for 74 snaps in just the last game, right? So we're basically seeing a guy here who, for the past couple weeks, has only been on the field for half as many snaps each game, and that's pretty troubling. I mean, the thing about Sammy Coates is there's going to be a week we think that he's going to be out there for all the snaps, and if that happens, it would be pretty hard for him to maintain his 25% target share. But even if he goes down to, say, 15% or 14% target share, you're looking at a guy who could be a mid-7,000s receiver. Pittsburgh has had the ability to support multiple, medium to high-priced receivers in the past. And I think very notable is the fact that defenses are so focused on Antonio Brown that Coates has been able to get his when he does get out on the field. So I like Coates this week. I think he's still very affordable at 6,400 on FanDuel. I plan on playing him at those prices. It's going to be interesting for me to see how the snaps continue. So they went up from the Kansas City game to the Jets game. If they continue to rise, he's going to be a guy I'm going to be locking in at any price under 7,000. If they maintain at this level, I think the production we've seen is unsustainable. And of course, he doesn't need to sustain that production to be worth 6,400. Like, he doesn't need to score 30 points a week. But yeah, I think even at this many snaps, similar targets, or I want to see normal targets and all the snaps. So that's what I'm looking for. But yeah, I think he's still a fine play for this week.
There's a scenario, I suppose. On DraftKings, he's 4,700, which is clear. I mean, not free anymore. There is some scenario where you can play Bell, Brown, and Coates together in cash games and figure that you're getting just about all of the Steelers' points. Now, the question then becomes, are they going to score enough points for you for that to pay off? It almost feels like they will, just considering how much those three guys dominate getting the ball for that team. And if you feel like that's almost all of their targets. I know there's a couple, there's some other, Xavier Grimbles and Jesse Jameses of the world in there getting some passes, but for the most part, that's really all of where they're going with the ball on offense. And thankfully, Coates is not so expensive that he's out of contention yet. So I think there is a scenario where you could play all three together and just be like, there's no other team that has the enough implied Vegas points and just the distribution of usage that this team does, where I think you could make the case for this one is close on those three guys for me.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. I mean, the Steelers this week, second highest total, implied total behind the Patriots. And the Patriots have just right now, it's an absolute quagmire trying to wade through who's going to get those red zone targets in particular. So given that the Steelers are sort of a known commodity at this point, very reasonable, I think, to lock up, their top three guys. and just take their production for cash game purposes. Now, for big tournaments, I think that that's a little bit risky. I mean, obviously, then you have to play Ben in that scenario as well. But two receivers and a running back from the same team, plus their quarterback, I think you're going to have some really limited upside problems there. So, yeah, cash games, it feels relatively appropriate. And yeah, for big tournaments, I would stay away from.
Yeah, for tournaments, you need to figure they were going to put up around that 40 spot, and that would be the only three guys that scored. So I don't know. Yeah, it's probably diminishing returns at that point, but I just think the floor is high in those plays. If you lock those three guys into optimal lineups for us, right now basically two of the three are coming in different scenarios. If you lock all three in, you take about a 10% hit on production, just in terms of just what we have them projected points to be. You know, the differences in overall projected lineup. So the difference is about 10 to 12 points, which is significant when you're looking
that's really hard to recover from that.
No, agreed. So we'll have to see how things play out. One thing I should have mentioned with running backs, but it does come into play for the scenario we just discussed, is Eddie Lacy has sat out practice today. He left the Sunday night game early and didn't practice today. If he were to sit this week, then James Starks would automatically jump to the top of the running back value and probably be a must play because he's coming at the minimums on both sites. So I kind of glossed over it on the running back value piece because we hadn't written him up, but it's worth mentioning here. If Lacy weren't to play, then Starks is the guy that unlocks everything else for the rest of the lineup. So
yeah, he had 15 touches last week against the Giants. Like that's right. That's an insane value.
Yeah, he'd be the chalkiest guy going if Lacy weren't to play. So I just didn't want someone to say, well, what about him if that were to end up being the case? And that makes a lot of these other salary questions moot because he is just so cheap. But as of right now, we really don't have a play like him. So, and that's what makes things a little more difficult. The next guy we wrote up was T.Y. Hilton. Walk us through why we wrote up a guy like Hilton in this week instead of, let's say, Amari Cooper or Jarvis Landry, two other guys sort of in that same salary range. I mean, Hilton's more expensive than both of those plays. So why Hilton over two other maybe definitive WR1s that we see in Landry and Cooper?
Well, so what Hilton does that those other two guys don't do is just garner insane amounts of targets and generate huge amount of upside. I mean, Landry actually is highly targeted as well. I would say arguably he has a tougher quarterback situation there, but let's do them one by one. So Cooper is simply too erratic in terms of his opportunity from game to game. 15% target share is really not where you want to be when you get over 7,000, unless you're a huge downfield threat. And while Cooper is that, I don't want to disparage him there. Hilton has just been getting all the looks from Luck recently. I mean, 18% on every single snap in the game last week against Chicago is truly elite. And I think we also put Hilton out there because he's just a huge upside guy, like while Cooper and who's the other guy you said? I lost track already.
Landry.
Yeah. While Cooper and Landry are both good plays, and Landry in particular is very solid, Hilton's the kind of guy who, when he does go off and everything does click two times a season, he could have been in your winning big tournament lineups, the game against San Diego and against Chicago. So I think it's that both those reasons, both the increased target share and also just the increased upside over those guys.
Yeah, I think you end up seeing Cooper slightly maybe more of a chalk play than Hilton, mostly because you're getting the savings on FanDuel at least an $800 savings, but no other player has really emerged for that Colts wide receiver core to challenge Hilton, whereas Cooper's seen some of his targets go to Crabtree, especially in the end zone this year, that's just something that hasn't happened to Hilton. So that's where I sort of like the floor on Hilton a little more than Cooper, because Oakland has shown that they will just throw to whoever is open mostly. Like they'll really distribute throws more than, say, a team like Indianapolis will. So the last guy we had on the list was Doug Baldwin. Baldwin's coming off a bye. He is a guy that we've liked, although I feel like we've always been on him during the wrong week. So it's just, this is a week where he plays the Falcons, much better matchup than maybe they've had in the short term against some of these other slow teams. Is Baldwin just kind of a sneaky play to you at this point? Do you think that people are on him as a wide receiver one type, or does he strike you more as even a tournament play because people are going to be looking in other areas for wide receiver?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what the public perception of Baldwin is. I read that stuff, but tend to focus more on our internal stuff to a greater degree. But the case for Baldwin, I think, is really interesting this week. I mean, Atlanta, they're an interesting defensive profile. So they've allowed the most receptions this season, and they've been pretty efficient at keeping those receptions down to a low yards per attempt. That leads me to believe that this is the perfect matchup for Baldwin because that's exactly the type of routes he likes to run. And I should mention, all that package for Atlanta has added up to the defense that's allowed the 6 most passing yards on the season so far. So it's not like you can't pass on Atlanta. It's just that they have done a reasonable job of keeping the downfield ball, you know, pretty well under control. So I do like Baldwin for this week. He does feel like more of a sneaky play. I mean, playing 7,600 for a guy that just coming off such a bad week and a bye means he's going to be pretty well off other people's radars, I think. And, you know, with some of the health issues with Wilson this season, like, it just hasn't been the same season for Baldwin as it was last year. People will rightfully point out that, you know, Jimmy Graham has had a little resurgence there, that, you know, last year's touchdowns were a fluke and all that kind of thing. And I think that 7,600 is probably too expensive on FanDuel. It's kind of the exact spot you don't want to be for salary for your cash games, right? Mm-hmm. I think you want to be up in the higher levels, or you just want to find some cheap plays that can round things out, like Sammy Coates or somebody. But yeah, reasonable play, I think, in big tournaments, although probably not the guy I'm going to put in there in cash games.
And I was wrong. The last guy we wrote up was Mike Wallace. Now, Wallace was in there with a caveat that it really required Steve Smith to be out. Smith did not practice today. I know a couple Ravens beat writers speculated that he was not going to play this week. If he were to not play, it appears like Wallace would jump right to the top of the target chain for Baltimore. To some degree, Pitta, who we'll talk about in a second, but he saw an increased target load last week when Smith went down early in the game, ended up going 7 for 63, has a fine enough matchup this week against the Giants, who just have their own struggles on defense. So Wallace would be, you know, let's say this, if Smith was out, Wallace and Coates on FanDuel are the same price. Who do you think you'd rather play?
Yeah, that's kind of tough. I mean, I guess it depends on what my goals would be. Coates has obviously flexed both more safety and upside recently in terms of actual production. But I'd like to think that Wallace's role would be a little bit more defined than Coates's would be. Because again, like, while Coates has been quite good, there's some scenario where he's only out there for 35 snaps and doesn't get 25% of the targets when he's on the field, right? Especially as other teams get more film on him and are able to prepare for kind of that two-headed monster receiving attack that the Steelers have been offering so far. Wallace has been highly targeted. I mean, the problem with Wallace as well is that he's just kind of like a poor man's T.Y. Hilton in a lot of ways. Like, he's never been a guy who generates a lot of receptions off the targets he does get. So I think I'd feel fairly lukewarm on it, but I would probably go Wallace in that situation.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. And again, we're going to need to keep an ear out for that Smith news. That'll play a key. And that actually leads me into what I mentioned before, into the Dennis Pitta piece, where at tight end, we mentioned in the last podcast yesterday about how tight end seemed to be a position we just didn't feel comfortable spending up for, where it, mm-hmm. it just didn't. There was a couple guys clearly at the top end of the salary chain that, while sort of safe, didn't offer the safety that you needed at their salaries. So we talked about, you know, just maybe grabbing some volume-ish guys in the middle tier, in that maybe 5,000 range on FanDuel, or the mid 3,000s to low 4,000s on DraftKings. Pitta is one of those guys because of if Smith weren't to play. So he kind of has the same reasoning as Wallace, and I don't think we need to go into it. The other two guys we wrote up were Zach Miller and Delanie Walker. Walk me through sort of the thinking on each of these two guys.
Sure. The first thing to note about tight end this week, and it seems like all year, is that it's been one of the lowest points per dollar projection positions in our system all season long. And so what I mean by that is, you know, we essentially multiply the guy's points by 1,000 and then divide it into the salary to figure that out. And so at wide receiver, there are, let's see here, there's almost 20 wide receivers with a higher points per dollar projection than Dennis Pitta, who currently, you know, is the number one points per dollar guy in our tight end system. So that's quite bad. I mean, basically what that means is the more money you spend up at tight end, the more money you're lighting on fire. So my recommendation is going to be probably go as cheap as you can here while still, you know, getting a reasonable player. Like, you just don't want to get someone who's not going to be out there at all. But and the guy for me that represents that kind of safety is Zach Miller this week. Miller, you know, I actually do perceive him to be a little bit safer than Pitta, just because Pitta's role has been so up and down this season, whereas Miller has been a little bit more defined. And again, he had a bad game against Detroit, so maybe not perfectly so. But what Miller represents for the Bears is, first of all, a really, really reasonable red zone target. 3 touchdowns in the last 3 games, including a 2-touchdown game against Dallas. He's out there on the field for the whole game. And I know this sounds like damning with faint praise, but it's just where we're at with tight ends. And yeah, 7 receptions last game and 8 2 3 weeks ago against Dallas. So, you know, he's a big part of the offense, such as it is compared to other tight ends. 10 or more fantasy points in 3 straight weeks. And if I'm going to be at a bad position where guys generally do nothing or they're all over the place, I'll just take the guy who gets the snaps and gets the targets and hope for the best.
One other piece of injury news on that front that will definitely crystallize before, maybe not before Thursday's games, but clearly before Sunday. Jordan Reed didn't play today. That would be a lot of targets out of the Redskins. Excuse me, he didn't practice today because he's being evaluated for concussion. That would take a lot of targets out of the Redskins, just their offensive scheme in general.
Yeah, their target pool.
Right, and that could mean an increase, if a starting role possibly for a guy like Vernon Davis. Maybe we see a Niles Paul in there. That's an interesting one for the tight end position. If we're looking to get even cheaper with maybe some, you know, implied safety, that tight end situation in Washington is definitely something to keep an eye on going forward, because I'm with you. I just don't think we want to pay really at all for the position. I'm fine to just punt it and just get in safety other places. We'll be back again on Friday for a live podcast. Well, not live. We'll be in the same room for Friday's podcast, which will be nice. We'll break down every week 6 game. We'll do a game-by-game breakdown there, which have been something that the listeners have really kind of appreciated, I think, and something that we like that helps to formulate some more of our ideas going forward as the week gets going. And we'll have more news at that point also. So check back on Friday for the week 6 game-by-game breakdown. Buddy, it's good to talk to you. I'm going to jump on with Chris here and talk some NHL.
I can't wait to see your face, buddy.
Thanks. Talk to you. All right. As promised, I'm here with Chris Durrell, I would call Chris the Swiss Army knife of DFS. Chris does basically he writes for NHL for us, NFL, PGA, NASCAR. Did I cover it, Chris? Is that all the things?
Yeah, I think that's all for now.
I don't know if there's many other people in the DFS industry that can say that they write competently and successfully about as many sports as Chris does. So I wanted to get him on today, talk a little bit of NFL, talk about NHL, which starts tonight and really starts in earnest tomorrow night for Thursday, where they have a much bigger slate. But let's start with NFL. So Chris, you've been doing our stacks article each week where we're trying to focus on different stacking options that one can employ for tournaments, honestly, stacking sort of works in cash games as well. But where do you start when you're doing research on, and you'll typically write up 3 to 4 stacks per week, where do you really start your research for that?
I start with the Player Lab tool, to be honest. I go there, and just with all the filters, it makes it really nice. So the first thing I always like to go and do is go and click on the High Vegas over-under. And you can go in and you can adjust it. So every week it's going to be different. Like the one week there was, I think, 3 games that were over 50. Looking early into this week, there's no games that are over 50. So normally if there's lots of games over 50, I'll go in and I'll set that at about 48. This week I'm probably going to, you know, bring it down to about 46, just to kind of narrow down the quarterbacks and wide receivers. That's kind of what I look at first. And then once I get that list together, I kind of get into the defense versus position that we've got on the Player Lab tool. Which, you know, factors in DVOA, which is a great stat just to kind of see which defenses are good to target in the pass or the rush. And then I just kind of go through and look at all the other advanced stats like projected attempts and workload for running backs or pace. Pace is a big one.
Yep.
How many points are being allowed. So that's kind of how I start.
And by the way, just so all those people listening that think this maybe is like some disingenuous plug for our system, like this wasn't the company line for Chris when he was writing the Stacks articles. We didn't say go use the Player Lab and write it specifically from that. So it just ends up being a nice organic plug. So thanks, pal. Good job by you throwing the system out there for us.
It's worked really well.
This week is a funny week for the NFL. James and I were talking about it obviously leading into this phone call, where we were saying that there just wasn't. It just didn't seem – it's a little bit of a tougher week, I think, which I think where that's going to come into play is those stacks that might be a little bit more off board, because I think there will be a couple big chalk plays in terms of the big high over-under games, you know, like let's say Patriots or Steelers, teams like that. But I think there's going to be a lot of value, tournament value along the margins with some of these other teams, because it's just not totally crystal clear where the other high upside players are going to come from. But clearly they're going to come from somewhere.
100% agree with you. One thing else you mentioned with stacks is you don't just have to use those in tournaments. So what I've been trying to do is narrow down a running back / defensive stack. Kind of they correlate together. I mean, if your defense is shutting down the other team, you're obviously going to be in the lead. The running back's going to get more workload. So that's one thing. And normally I will use the running back defensive stack in cash games. Just cash games, I like paying up for my running backs.
Yep.
So that's kind of where I go after my defense running back stack, and it's actually worked out quite well.
And that's going to be one of those weeks too, I think, where we're looking at, and this is again something we talked about, but that the paying up for value at running back is especially big this week, I think, because there are just at least at this point, you know, we're recording this Wednesday. News always comes. This has been a pretty low injury news week so far, and so I'm just not totally sure there's going to be that punt play where we're going to be able to save, and therefore we're going to need to just figure out where to spend. And it seems to me like that running back defensive stack could be the way to go. So if you want to check out Chris's article, he typically has the stacks article up sometime around Thursday or Friday. Yeah, let's say Friday, sometime the other day on Friday that you can check out. That is up on the site, or it's also going out in our newsletter if you want to sign up for that to get that in your inbox each week. So he's doing a great job for us. We're really happy with it, and look forward to talking some more football. But really, the other piece we wanted to mention today was the NHL season. So NHL starts tonight. The regular season starts tonight with four games. We have our base projections up for NHL now. Chris has been working like a madman getting those things prepared for the beginning of the year. We're happy with the way they've come out. We were really happy with our first season, which was last year, putting NHL together to the point where, you know, we even had some other industry folks reach out to us and say, you know, hey, you know, we want to carry some of those projections for you. We have them up on the site now as part of our base tool, not optimal lineups. We want to be really clear about that, where we have optimal lineups for NFL, NBA, and MLB. We do not have those for NHL. At this point, though, that's something we are working on. But the projections are up for this first four-game slate. Now, Chris knows that even though I've helped with the projections, I'm a relative NHL newbie in the sense that it's not a sport that I default to. So let's assume that for at least some of our listeners now, NHL is not going to be something that they know a ton about, but everyone likes a little DFS sweat here and there, and NHL can sort of fill the gaps sometimes between MLB, and there's some nights off with football, and we haven't started NBA yet. We're in that time where NHL can sometimes be the only game in town in terms of FanDuel and DraftKings. So start me off with a little bit of just base strategy, Chris. Like, what if I'm just getting started with NHL, what do I want to look at? What are some numbers that I want to sort of focus on if I'm just looking to drill down a little bit of value on a night?
Yeah, for sure. So, of course, you got your two different games, same as any sport. You got cash games and you got GPPs / tournaments. So starting with cash games, I guess, which is probably what I play the most on a nightly basis for hockey. And looking at cash games, I always pay up for my goalie. So I'm looking at the Vegas odds to see who's the best goalie in the best situation as the biggest favorite of the night. I don't want to get cute there. I want to take that big favorite goalie. And then I look at defense. So for cash games, I like to go value with both those spots. And when you're looking for defensemen cheap, what you want to look for, especially on, say, DraftKings, where you're getting a half point for a block, is defensemen that get lots of block shots. And there is some defensemen that continually get tons of block shots and will give you 2 to 3, sometimes 4 points in a night. If they get an assist or a goal, that's just a bonus for a defenseman, you know, between $2,500, $3,500, somewhere in there, depending on your site, of course. I like to go two of those value guys in cash games because when I go up to my forwards, I like to get, you know, I like to look for the highest projected goals of which team is going to score the most goals that night and kind of narrow it down to two or three teams and then take my players from those teams. Now, of those players, I'm really looking for players who are on the first or second line. Obviously, they're going to get more shots, more ice time, just more production. And then if I can, I'd like to spread it out between, say, the top scoring teams, first line and second line, so maybe one player from each line. And then if you can, and a lot of teams you can, where they have two good forwards that play on different lines, but when it comes to the power play time, they play together. So that's huge. Just kind of a lot of correlation points there.
So that's really interesting. So in some ways, so just to back up for a second, I've thought about NHL as in some ways similar to baseball. Like, it has some similar concepts that you employ. So I always compared, and you tell me if I'm correct about this, I've always compared the goalie to a pitcher in baseball. He collects points in a totally different way than the rest of the team. It's based a lot about wins. Yeah, I kind of look at those saves as the strikeouts and the the goals against as those earned runs. And it's funny too, because when we put together just the formulas for this, you know, Chris and I have been working on putting together formulas, and a lot of the formulas for goalie projection are very similar to the pitcher projection. I was able to bring over a lot of those ideas. Do you see those two things as kind of similar, like in the way you sort of put together your lineups?
You're bang on with that. You know, when you're looking at cash games for baseball, that pitcher's number one. You know, on DraftKings, you're looking for more strikeouts. On FanDuel, the win is a little bit more important. Mm. When it comes to, there's no two goalie site, I guess, on DraftKings, but same, I kind of look at FanDuel for baseball as I do for hockey for both, is that your goalie is number one. So that's why I really pay up in cash games, because I just don't want to get fancy with those and, you know, go with a cheaper goalie because he's in a good situation, but he's not that good.
Right.
You lose. If your goalie loses, your goalie, he only makes, say, 15 saves and gets a loss, you're done. You might as well not even look at the rest of your lineup.
And the other thing that I think is a comp in from baseball to hockey, as opposed to maybe some of the other sports, is the concept of stacking. And I've heard and talked to some hockey guys, just, you know, just being around the industry a little bit more and talking with you about hockey in general, is that the concept of stacking, or taking a team, maybe for cash but also for tournaments, and taking a team and trying to grab onto all of the scoring that's going to happen for that team, strikes me as very similar to baseball, in that you want to, you know, maybe increase your variance a little bit in a tournament, but also with the idea that you're going to capture all the scoring. Do you see those two ideas as kind of being similar from hockey to baseball?
Yeah, most definitely. Stacking, I do it a little bit different between cash games and GBPs. For GBPs, I'll stack a whole line.
Right.
Just because with hockey, you got a goal and then you got two assists that can come too. So three players can get points on one given play. So definitely stacking an entire line. If they go off that night, you're in a great spot. So yeah, so just for the correlation in GPPs, it's nice to get those three guys on one line. And I usually just narrow it down to two separate teams that are going to go high scoring, and take my six players from those two teams all in the same line, making sure that at least five out of six of those players are going to get power play time. And to be a little bit contrarian, you just kind of go down the list a bit. If you take the Chicago Blackhawks, they're projected for the most goals tonight. If you go down to their second or third line, that's where you can kind of go contrarian a little bit. So, or find guys that maybe play the power play with some of those top players.
Yeah, so I have a question about lineups. I know sometimes with baseball, I hate to keep bringing back the comp, but I think for people that are just coming into NHL, I just do think that is the best like sports comp that we have. I would tend to run multiple cash lineups just to reduce my variance a little bit on a baseball slate, because, again, like, you know, in NHL, those goals and assists can be sort of all or nothing ventures, where it's going to be maybe sometimes hard to accrue points if you're not getting either of those two things. I know you can kind of trickle in points with blocks and here and there. Will you run multiple cash lineups with teams that are in good positions because you want to reduce that variance a little bit, or do you tend to go with just one lineup?
Normally it's just one, but on nights, you know, say the bigger nights where you got 11 to 14 games going, I will make multiple lineups, but I won't so much go and switch the forwards and the defensemen out. What I'll do is I'll get a very comfortable cash lineup that I just absolutely love. Mm-hmm. You know, spread across three different teams. You've got two players from each team. But I have two goalies that are like within $100 of each other. What I'll do first is take the most expensive goalie, make that lineup that I love, and then go and replace that on the second lineup. Just replace the goalie, just to kind of cover the, because you only get one goalie.
Yep.
I mean, you make a very good comp with baseball in that you can have one or two players that get 0 points in a night and you can still cash.
Mm-hmm.
If you get your goalie through and you get, you know, some points from the rest of your lineup, you can have those couple players that don't cash. So I'm not so concerned about the forwards as I am with the goalies. So that's kind of how I do cash on big nights.
And just to be clear, these are things that are all factored into the base numbers for our system. Those win percentages, those goals against, the saves, the pace of the game. We have all this stuff baked into our projections. And, you know, we've liked the way they've come out with in terms of hockey. We like the way that it's kind of bringing value to the top, both from the goalie and from some of those offensive players. Chris does a great job of making sure the systems are updated when players switch lines, when, you know, their opportunity changes, sort of a lot of the same concepts we see in the rest of DFS, that if you're going to have a projection system, you just need to have people that are just this. Some of this stuff simply cannot be automated. I mean, a lot of it can be, but the part where there's a line switch and new opportunity or just like circumstances have changed, you really need people in there into the, so we call it like the guts of the system, making sure that those things are correct. And that's where Chris does a great job with this. When I'm, if I'm playing, if I'm playing Wednesday night, so some people are going to be listening to this Wednesday because we're going to be releasing this Wednesday afternoon. Some people might be listening to Thursday. I know Thursday is a little bit far out. If I'm looking just tonight, Wednesday, give me the goalie that you're targeting and maybe just a play or two for Wednesday, and then we'll just maybe see if there's any early thoughts for Thursday. But what do you think about the Wednesday night slate?
Yeah, before you get into that, I just wanted to kind of touch on what you were just talking about just with the projections and stuff. Especially in GPPs, if you're looking for value and you want to stack, say, the Ovechkins and the Crosbys, well, not exactly Crosby now because he's out with a concussion for we don't know how long, but if you want to stack some of those high-end players, a good way to find value is just to pay attention to all the lineup sites to after morning skates in the morning. Sometimes you get players, like last year was a good example, where you get some rookies, some young players that they're just trying to mix in with the Crosbys and the Ovechkins just to get some, either to get them more comfortable in the system or just to try and find someone that gels with the superstars. So if you find a guy that's been playing on the third line most of the season, he's kind of minimum price, and he's all of a sudden skating with Crosby or Ovechkin at the morning skate, that's a huge value. I always like to jump in on that. Even in cash games, if I'm looking for a guy, I don't want to pay up. I want a more balanced lineup. I'll grab that guy that's playing with the superstar, playing right beside him, even if he's playing on the power play. So, yeah, you made a great point there.
Great. Let's talk. I'm glad because, again, I'm coming at hockey from a totally noob standpoint, which I think
you don't sound like a noob.
Well, you know what? I am when it comes to knowing all the players. And it's a funny thing with DFS. Like, you need to just understand all these other little things. Like, I've heard of the Ovechkins and the Crosbys of the world, obviously, but when I stare at our system, sometimes I have to do a double check because I'm like, well, who are these guys? And this isn't to decrease confidence. This is why we have Chris here. You know, you need someone that knows all this stuff, but I like to come at it as asking questions and making sure I understand and then just making sure things line up. Who do you like from tonight? Who do you like from Wednesday's games?
Yeah, looking at two goalies pretty much tonight. Corey Crawford at home. Chicago was a little bit of a favorite. He had a good season last year. And then the other one, I guess I'm looking at, is Martin Jones. And just looking at the splits last year, he was better on the road, but he was very good against LA all year. He was 7-2-1. And I think he had like a 2.3 goals against average. So those are the two goalies I'm looking at. Kind of, if you want to go contrarian tonight, I really like going with Frederik Andersen now that he's on the Leafs against Ottawa. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game in Ontario tonight, and he's, like, I think one of the cheapest goalies, so I would be using him for GPPs just to kind of stack some of those top forwards.
And what's the top line that you like for Wednesday's games, you think?
I'm looking at Calgary's top line and Edmonton. I think that's going to be probably one of the highest-scoring games of the night, so I'm kind of looking at the top lines on both of those, and for tournaments, I'll probably stack them, like Johnny Hockey for Calgary, and then for Edmonton, looking at Connor McDavid in his second season. I just think how good he was last year over a point per game, that he's going to come out in a full season and just absolutely explode. I think he's going to be a 100-point guy, kind of like Patrick Kane last year, so... That would be the game. I think the other three games are going to be very close and low scoring. So that's the game I'm going to be targeting for offense.
We noticed from Vegas, we were talking before we started recording, that the Vegas lines for the Wednesday game were really pretty thin in terms of, it didn't see either the games were just projected to be close, or Vegas was just relatively uncertain about this new season and just wasn't really willing to stick its neck out, and really nobody is, because all the lines are pretty close. The over-unders, all the projected goals, no one's really deviating too much. So I don't know if you, I think, you know, something we talked about a little off the air, but something I think that will crystallize a little bit more for Vegas as the season goes on, as they're starting to realize, you know, this team stands out above the rest. Do you see anything, if let's say people are just jumping into this podcast Thursday morning, which I suspect might be the case, you can head over to the site. Chris has his full picks up for the Thursday night slate of games, which is really probably the real start of the NHL season, as there's many more games on Thursday than Wednesday. So head over to dfsr.com and just click on the hockey tab, and you'll be able to see Chris's plays for Thursday, and you should be all set to go. And you can also grab a free 3-day trial to that projection system, which will hook you up with NHL projections. Chris, dude, good luck with hockey Wednesday night. Good luck with hockey Thursday. We're going to be talking more hockey probably at least a couple times a week over the course of the season, added onto the NFL podcast, because I think people get more comfortable with that sport, or our NBA podcast as well. So we'll definitely be talking to you again, man. Good luck, and I'll talk to you soon. That's it for us today. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. Head over, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. You can get optimal lineups for NFL, coming soon NBA, and get our base projections for NHL. Talk to you again on Friday with our Week 6 game-by-game breakdown.